my heart just breaks for the folks in the hotel world and the restaurants and this, you know, the entertainment venues. So it's been a real challenge. And it's been a real challenge for our organization and many others. But, you know, with all those challenges also comes unique opportunities. And we've tried to stay focused on building our future pipeline, you know, 21 and beyond, and really trying to figure out what can we actually do just to make even just a little bit of a difference.
Well, if anyone is up to the challenge of making a difference during a pandemic, it's Ryan Vaughn. A born and bred Hoosier, he nearly drowned as a young boy. He credits Wabash College for saving his life. Earned a law degree at IU, went on to become a key figure in Indianapolis politics. Get to know Indiana Sports Corporation President Ryan Vaughn on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. Well, as a kid, Ryan Vaughn, he was like most Hoosier boys. He clipped playing cards to his bike spokes, loved to shoot hoops and swim, loved romping around with his buddies on the west side of Indianapolis. Those buddies he still considers some of his best friends today. There's a lot more to Ryan Vaughn. A silver lining to a near-drowning experience. He eventually became an NCAA academic All-American swimmer. The law degree, it opened doors. Politics sparked his passion for Indianapolis. Now the leader of the Indiana Sports Corporation, he is a driving force behind Central Indiana's $3.4 billion sports tourism industry. And it is my pleasure to have Ryan Vaughn as my guest on the Business and Beyond podcast. Ryan, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Great to be with you as always.
You are a guy who... Your job has always been one on the go with a lot going on, a lot of moving parts, but I think that has expanded exponentially with March Madness, with the pandemic. First of all, to get us in a more current state, March Madness, the entirety of the tournament, all 67 teams will be in Indiana in March. How do things stand? Where do things stand right now?
Yeah, things are progressing really well. I mean, actually, sometimes it just kind of have to knock on wood to think we went from planning three basketball games with four teams to planning, you know, 67 games with 68 in a little more than a month's notice. Things are going great, but that's, you know, that's in large part to, you know, what you know and what I know is a tremendous community partnership between Visit Indy, all the venues, the CIB, the city, the state, Sports Corp. I'm happy with our progress and excited for March.
Ryan, how did it come about? Did the NCAA approach Indianapolis, or was it vice versa? How did this whole thing start?
Yeah, I would say the official outreach definitely came from the NCAA initially. Early on, sort of saw the success that I think that Orlando had had, the NBA had had in Orlando, along with many other leagues that had some form of a controlled environment, whether it was a full-on bubble or just very enhanced safety protocols, and decided, late fall, that if they were going to successfully execute a tournament, that they needed to do it at a single site. And then they reached out to us as a community, figure out, you know, we were already scheduled to host the 21 Final Four. And it also helps that they're in our backyard and that we have a great downtown for that. So that was the initial outreach, really.
Ryan, I can't imagine the logistics and the complexities of putting this whole thing together. Take us behind the curtain, if you will, to some of the discussions. How challenging was it to put this all together and come up with something that you were ready to make an announcement on?
Yeah, I think for context, and I don't know that a lot of people really appreciate this, but more often than not, when we're bidding to host an event, we're working with our partners at the hotels and Visit Indy and the venues. And we're looking at events that are 5 and 7 years down the road. It was almost 4 years ago that we were awarded the 2026 Men's Final Four. If you think about that as kind of a time frame. So much of what we do, while the visible part is sort of the day of execution, the behind the scenes is really long-term planning. Obviously, this situation does not fit that mold. And so we had some real challenging logistical problems to overcome on a short notice. You think, the first conversations with the NCAA starting late October, early November, about an event that tips off on March 14th, that's a really compressed timetable. And so, Visit Indy Leonard Hoops and Andy Mallon at the CIB deserve a ton of credit and appreciation from this community, because what they had to do was go work with existing convention customers that were scheduled to be there at that time, hotels that were scheduled to be full at that time, and really kind of rearrange the schedule to figure out how to wedge this incredible event in. And so they did great work.
Were there naysayers? Did some think it could not be done? Was there ever that moment you said, you know, I just don't see how we can pull it off?
I don't think there were naysayers. I mean, I always believed as a community that we could execute it. I never had any doubt there. I think to the extent there were concerns, it was just going to be, what is the state of college basketball? Will college basketball be able to play, right? I mean, early on in the season, everyone was starting to learn, you know, what was working, what wasn't working as the teams were traveling and then going on pause. You know, how do you kind of overcome that? And so if there was any anxiety around hosting March Madness, it was less about our capacity to do it and do it safely. It was more about how many teams will be up and standing and running come March.
Speaking of capacity, the NCAA recently announced up to 25% of capacity at venues for the entire tournament, which I would imagine a lot of restaurants and venues, hotels and others in downtown Indianapolis and other places really like that, because obviously, as you well know firsthand, it's been a tough year.
Yeah, it's been an extraordinarily tough year for the folks in the hospitality industry. And to be able to have the event, one, is an extraordinary benefit to them. To be able to include some element of fans, up to 25% in each of these six venues, is really exceptional. I mean, we've always believed from the moment of the announcement that people would come to town just to be part of it, even if they couldn't get in the venue. Media would come to town just to be around, even if they weren't credentialed to get in. But to know and sort of send a public message nationally that, you know, if you are a fan and if you do find your way into access to tickets, you're going to be able to take part in likely the only college basketball game you've been to all year here in our city is pretty awesome.
What makes Indy special to be able to do this? There's the tightness of the downtown, obviously, the geography, the central location. But is there a special sauce here, Ryan, that gives Indianapolis the ability to pull this kind of thing off?
Yeah, it's the people and the relationships. You know, we talk about Indy a lot as being sort of a city with major city amenities, professional sports teams, wonderful hotels, great restaurants and dining scenes, but it still has that small town feel. And there aren't very many communities across the country. And I know, because I talk to my peers in the cities we compete against that, you know, have, you know, community partners that come together and just work unselfishly to make moments like this possible. And so you've got, you know, a governor and a mayor of different political parties that work hand in glove, set politics aside. You've got presidents of different professional sports franchises that, practically speaking, compete against one another for customers that work hand in glove. And everyone does it for the spirit of Indy. You know, I felt that in my public service life, and I certainly feel it in this role. And I think it's what really helps us be successful, especially under these tight circumstances, right? People always talk about, you know, make a friend before you need a friend. I'm glad we had that before we needed it this time.
Mm-hmm. You have seen the transformation of Indianapolis up close and personal. Grew up in Indianapolis, a West Sider, Chapel Glen neighborhood, right?
That's right.
West 10th Street. What was it like for you growing up in Indianapolis?
I loved it. I originally born in Muncie, moved down here when I was three, when my sister was born. We had a, you know, really tight-knit neighborhood, you know, five or six really good friends that lived around the neighborhood. We hung out together all the time. We played in the green belt, you know, swam in the pool, you know, played tennis, roughhoused. It was really special. And as you mentioned in the intro, I'm still very close to all of those guys. Still great friends of mine this many years later. So it was special.
And you credit your mom. Your mom's single mom, right? Your parents were divorced. Your dad was certainly involved in your life, but your mom really made an effort to make sure you had a great environment in which to grow up in.
Yeah, my mom was and continues to be an extraordinary influence on my life. She's one of the hardest working, toughest people I've ever met. You know, she supported two kids basically on her own. That's not to disparage my father at all. Mm-hmm. And kept us. Worked really hard, multiple jobs to keep us in a neighborhood that was close to our friends, because she knew how important those relationships and access to those schools were going to be for us. And, you know, I serve on a school board now on the Near East Side, and I talk to those kids and I tell them it was never never a question of if I was going to college. It was always a question of where, which I didn't fully appreciate until I went to college, that no one else in my family had ever done that before. But she held the standard high. She pushed us and she made it all possible.
I love that. And we're going to talk about your college experience in a moment. But swimming, you mentioned swimming. That's been a huge part of your life. And actually, a defining moment of your childhood when you almost drowned.
Yeah, it's funny how these things work. But I was a child, a small child, up in Muncie, as I mentioned, where I was born, and kind of riding a tricycle around my grandparents' pool, like you mentioned, with the cards and the wheels, making the exhaust sound, pretending I was like the Indy 500. And you know, it just so happened that the adults had kind of stepped inside to grab some food, and I fell in. And maybe this speaks to my personality, but apparently I'm told I would not let go of the tricycle. And so I was stuck on the bottom and nearly drowned. Luckily, my dad noticed the absence of sound and, you know, rushed in and was able to save me. But as you can imagine, at grandparents' house, that immediately resulted in one of two things. We're either filling up the swimming pool with dirt or we're going to take Ryan to swimming lessons. And so I got to go to swimming lessons, community swim lessons at the then newly opened IU Natatorium in the early 80s. And swimming lessons turned into neighborhood swim team, turned into high school and then college. So it's been a really, really important part of my life for sure.
Oh, well, you mentioned college. You went on to Wabash College in Crawfordsville, one of our state's great private institutions, became an All-American, academic All-American swimmer there. So you were just not a guy on the team. You were very accomplished.
Well, I had to work my way there. I've shared probably one of the single most, if not the single most defining influence in my life during college was my swim coach, Gail Pebworth. Gary, you're familiar with Wabash, but you can imagine a female swim coach at an all-male institution barking at 18 to 22-year-olds to kind of get it together.
All right.
And I really struggled my first year of college, honestly. My grades my first semester were not good. I was not sort of mentally prepared to tackle the rigor of Wabash. And frankly, I got really sick. I ended up having mono and left the swim team and just really struggled with purpose. And my coach just would not let go. I mean, she would call and check on me. Even when I wasn't on the team, she'd come by and stop by. She very cleverly asked me to come back and serve as a timer for the Wabash DePaul swim meet. And I'll never forget this moment. And you'll appreciate this. And I can't believe I'm sharing this with you because I'll never hear you. My freshman year, the DePaul swim program beat us by 1 point in that head-to-head swim meet. And after the beat was over, coach walked by and said, "Thank you for timing. Do you realize if you would have swam your worst race ever, we would have won this by 3 points." that was all the motivation I needed to come back and come back with some vengeance the following years.
Yeah, and your coach, I mean, she winning as coach, is that right? In Wabash history, Hall of Famer, obviously, just an amazing coach. But you hit on something that I think, you know, sports is so important because of what it teaches people, and these coaches are teachers, and she was a teacher for you.
Yeah, most important. I mean, frankly, there's a lot of people that probably could have critiqued my stroke or, you know, been harder on me in the weight room, but there was something about her ability to reach deeper into me and talk to me about how to grow up, how to be a man. I mean, my wife, who I, you know, have been dating since high school and was dated through college, I'll tell you, you know, that was where the boy became a man, and it was in large part to the coaching outside of the pool from her, for sure.
Good stuff. Loyalty is big to you as well. You're loyal to Wabash, certainly to your boyhood friends, but you really feel strongly about there being no substitute for loyalty.
I do. It's the things that I sort of preach to my staff and to my friends. And I think sometimes when people hear that, they can be kind of pushed back a little bit. I think a lot of people mistake loyalty for allegiance. And, you know, allegiance, I think, is sometimes this sort of like blind support. And for me, you know, being loyal to the people you care about is sort of the deepest sense of caring. It's not only being there when they're being, you know, attacked or critiqued. It's also holding them accountable when they're wrong and, you know, being that honest voice with them. And you know, that to me is the real expression of caring. And it's been an important part of my life. starts obviously with my family, but my friends have been incredibly great in that aspect as well.
You mentioned loyalty. You mentioned your wife, Heather. You weren't high school sweethearts. You met in study hall in junior high, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My phrase is, I love my wife and she hates change. So, we've been really junior high sweethearts, if you will. It's been truly probably the most, special part of my life is to both literally have grown up together, honestly, and to grow through college and then professionally. And then, to continue to have just such a strong relationship it's awesome. She's my rock. She's the one that lets me do all these other crazy jobs.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, you were engaged, I think, your senior year in high school, married the next year as you went into law school. And we'll get into your professional career in Indianapolis. But first, that ticking sound we hear is our two-minute drill. Time for the two-minute drill here, where, Ryan, I'm going to ask you a couple of quick questions, quick answers, some of the pressing questions of the day. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. Country or rock and roll?
Country.
Oh, I like that. Very good. A favorite season?
Ooh, probably fall.
Okay, I'm with you. We're two for two on that. I agree with you on that. What makes you happiest?
Oh, wow, that's great. Given my schedule, going out to dinner with my wife.
Best sports movie of all time?
Probably Rudy.
Okay, I'm with you on that too. Most Hoosiers would say Hoosiers, but I'm with you on Rudy. Class basketball or single class?
It's going to sound bad coming from a Ben Davis guy, but single class probably.
Okay, I like that. That's good. Pet peeve. What does your wife say is your most annoying quirk?
I snore too loud and I never turn the lights off.
Outstanding. Eggs, scrambled or over easy?
Oh, sunny side up. I'm sorry. I got to go to that.
Okay, sunny side
up. Gotcha. There. Yeah.
Okay, final one for you, Ryan. College hoops in a dome stadium or an arena?
Ooh, probably an arena. I love the
arena. Yeah.
Intimacy of a basketball venue is hard to overcome.
More intimate. I like that. Well, you passed the 2-minute drill in flying colors. So we appreciate that. And we'll be back in a moment. We're going to talk about Ryan Vaughn post-college, his career in Indianapolis, which continues to ascend. And we will do that when the Business and Beyond podcast returns. Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is Ryan Vaughn, the president of the Indiana Sports Corporation. And Ryan, we've talked a lot about your younger days, your childhood in Indianapolis. You married your wife, Heather, just out of college. And then did you move to Indianapolis then to begin a law career?
Yeah, I went to law school downtown, what was then IU Indy, now McKinney School of Law. My goal at the time was to be the world's greatest litigator. I wanted to be in courtrooms and pound on tables and like I'd seen in the movies. And so I started my career actually as an intern with the deputy prosecutor's office.
You got into politics, though, fairly quickly. Did the law degree, did that kind of lead you to that political arena?
Actually, it was my experience working at the prosecutor's office that led me to that. As I mentioned, I always wanted to be a civil litigator. In order to do that successfully, I thought I needed trial experience. And so that's when I kind of chased that role as the deputy prosecutor. I ended up, after graduating law school and passing the bar, taking a full-time job there, worked there for about 4 years. After 4 years, I sort of felt like I'd learned what I could learn there. And I went into private practice. And what I found when I went into private practice was that I was getting a meaningful emotional reward for public service that I didn't fully appreciate when I was there. And so here I was in private practice, and that's, again, not disparaging to private practice, it's much needed, but it wasn't emotionally fulfilling to me. And so I was looking for a way to give back, and I kind of meandered my way into politics. I really wasn't engaged politically prior to that.
Well, you became very engaged. It was 5 years on the city county council, I think. You served as president of the council. So you trial by fire there, right into the fire. And ultimately, you became chief of staff for Mayor Greg Ballard. How did that come about? And talk about that experience.
Yeah, talk about being in the right place at the right time. I mean, when I became a counselor initially, I was fulfilling a role vacated by a counselor midterm. And so I came on for council in District 3 the year before the election. And as you might recall, we had a very popular, well-funded Democrat mayor, a Democrat majority city council. So I like to say I was elected unanimously, but the reality is no one else ran because no one else wanted to serve in the minority, what they thought would be forever. And so
right.
I became the newest, youngest member of the minority. So the most irrelevant person in city politics. And then it just so happened that, over the course of the next year, most Republicans decided not to run for re-election because they didn't want to serve in the minority. And all of a sudden, lightning struck. Mayor Ballard wins. Republicans win control of the council. And I went from being the newest, youngest member of the minority to one of the most senior members of the majority on the council.
Oh, wow.
Literally. Kind of overnight.
Yeah. You know, and I was amazed at that. I was struck by that. Here's Mayor Ballard, totally a political novice. And as I watched and covered him, but also just observed, I was really struck by how he grew on the job almost immediately. And really, I thought in so many ways did a really good job.
Yeah, he's a tremendous leader. And I've taken much of my leadership in this role, my philosophies from the way that he, he ran the mayor's office and the way he approached the city. I mean, he'll be the first to tell you that his, 20 plus years in the military helped him understand
right.
the importance mm-hmm. of onboarding the right people, delegating and trusting. And that's a very uncommon thing in the world of politics, I've come to find out. Mm-hmm. It just makes it a great work environment. People want to please him. They want to work with him and because they know that he trusts them or they wouldn't be there.
Yeah. As you look at Paul, are you finished with politics or is politics? A lot of people would love to see you in political office in the future.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm finished with it. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I did feel like it was the right time for a change as long as I could stay focused on making Indy better. If you had told me 15 years ago I would go from being a prosecutor to a counselor to a chief of staff to run a sports commission, I'd have thought you were crazy. So I've learned to never say never.
So. Yeah. So the door is open politically. Okay. Let's talk about Sports Corporation. As you mentioned, the Indiana Sports Corporation really leads what is such an important and large industry for our city, region, and our state. You think back to that again, Indianapolis as a leader, the first sports commission ever, right? 1979. Now there are, I think, several hundred around the country. What would you say the state of sports is, the sports industry, if you will, is right now as we hopefully come out of the pandemic?
Yeah, I would say sports will bring us back. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. We've been on much of the some board calls, and it's great on our board calls to hear from some of the founding, minds behind the sports strategy 40 years ago about the whole notion was to sort of reinvigorate the economy downtown, bring
right.
people downtown, bring major events downtown. And the way this is sort of playing itself out in this pandemic is that sports seem to be responsibly, in my opinion, the most aggressive in leading the way, right? I mean, most mm-hmm. things that are happening downtown are, college games, which we're hosting, or volleyball tournaments, youth tournaments. And they're really, we're well positioned as a community relative to our competitive set to really sort of kill it on that front. And I think, March Madness only helps amplify that message nationally. So I really do think sports will bring us back.
Ryan, give us, for folks who may not know or may not understand, how competitive that business is. It's always been competitive, but I've got to imagine that bidding on events, big time events in particular today, much different than it was even 10 years ago, let alone, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. In a big way, we're sort of the victims of our own success, right? I mean, we've done a nice job of telling how sports have developed and reinvigorated Indy from the, mid 70s to where we are today. And that narrative is not lost on our competitors, right? And so they've made big investments in the core of their downtown, in their venues, in their airports, in their convention centers. And candidly, some of them are outpacing us a little bit on their willingness to invest public funds to attract major events, fully understanding the value that they bring. And so it's a very, very competitive set. You look at emerging communities like Nashville, Columbus, Austin, you know, they're probably nipping on our heels, and we're competing head to head against Atlanta, New Orleans, Miami, Dallas, you know, kind of go on and on. So it's tough sledding out there, but thankfully we have 40 years of great history and tremendous community partnerships. So.
And those, some of those, I was going to ask you who the competitors are. You named them. You look at a place like Nashville, and they've got money too. So they're investing to be competitive, I assume.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And you know, to be perfectly frank, and you know, some of them are willing to do bad deals in order just to win, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And sort of get a seat at the table and prove that they can do these things. And so we won't do that. We'll always be responsible with the monies that are invested in us, but. There's certainly a lot more competition out there than there was, you know, even 5 years ago, really.
When do you think we'll see fans all the way back? I mean, do you anticipate maybe this fall, you know, for football, we'll begin to see stadiums full again, or do you think it will be a little more cautious than that?
You know, I'm not actually sure. It's a great question. And it's kind of twofold to me. Like, I think the first question is, you know, when do the health and safety authorities feel like it's safe to have fans all the way back. The flip side of that is, when do fans feel safe coming back? Right. So there's
a
mentality there. You know, I tell folks that maybe haven't been back to their office or haven't been back downtown. There is a little bit of a psychic overcoming, which is necessary to be in and around people. Even when you're socially distanced and masked up and being safe, you know, for a year, we've been sort of taught to look at each other as a potential threat. Right. And we're, of course, not. But it takes a little bit to overcome that. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of which returns first, the passion for the sport or the capacity for the fans.
Yeah. As you look going forward, Ryan, to your vision for the sports corporation, the sports movement, if you will, in Indianapolis, what are keys as you look on the horizon? We've obviously got continue to attract these big events. Is it the big event? Is it other things that will really drive continued growth in the sports sector here?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, it's always keeping that pipeline full, right? So what is that next big sports moment for us? They don't all have to be Final Fours, March Madness, the Super Bowls.
Yeah.
You need one of those every, you know, 18 months, 2 years, whatever.
Well, what do you think that next one might be? I mean, a lot of people talk about the draft as an example. Is that something, I know it's something we've been interested in as a city. Is that in our future?
Yeah, we've been tracking the draft for several years now. The draft, of course, rotating is a relatively new concept. And as a result, they're not really that far out in their bid process, meaning they're not bidding 5 and 7 years out. They're just a couple of years out. So it's a little difficult to find the right community moment. But that would be an awesome opportunity for us, and I think we would do exceptional for that. But if the pipeline is full, which again is our primary concern, I think the other things we've been doing around sports businesses, I think, are really important to continue to build that ecosystem. Right, the Techstars Sports Accelerator has been fantastic. You know, we launched an esports combine, which we're part owners in. I think esports is poised for significant growth. It's really sort of building those local assets here that will continue to support that sports economy.
Ryan Vaughn, the president of the Indiana Sports Corporation. You're a fascinating guy. You got a lot of great stories, born and bred Hoosier, making a difference to be sure in the sports movement and beyond. Ryan, it's been a pleasure to sit down and have a conversation with you this week. And I look forward to hopefully seeing you in person sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gary, thanks for always just being a great friend to our mission and to Indy. Appreciate it.
Very good. Thanks. Ryan Vaughn, president of the Indiana Sports Corporation, on the Business and Beyond podcast. Thank you all for joining us as well on this week's podcast. Weekly conversation with leaders, high achievers in business, sports, entertainment, politics, and beyond. For more on the podcast and for Indiana business news 24/7, all you have to do is check out InsideIndianaBusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. We'll see you next time.